Welcome to Law Subscribed. This is your dedicated news source for all things subscriptions and the law. My name is Matthew Kurbis. I'm the subscription attorney, and I believe subscriptions can help bridge the access to justice gap and incentivize attorneys to modernize and scale their practice like never before. In this episode, I interview Daniel Steinberg. Daniel is the founder of Law Broker. While not an attorney, he used to work at Clio and is very familiar with the legal profession. While we talk a little bit about how his legal tech product can help law firms be more efficient, we deep dive into entrepreneurship, what it means to have low friction in your business, of course, subscription models, and pricing. For those of you already running or interested in starting your own firm, the business takeaways alone from this interview are worth the listen. Thank you to my sponsors, 650 and Gavel. Links to both in the show notes, more on them later. And remember to use the code LAWSUBSCRIBED when signing up. It lets them know you found out about them from the podcast. You get 10% off, and it really supports the show. For subscriptionseminar.com, I'm still taking firms off the waitlist one at a time in the order they signed up. So sign up now to get your spot in line. I'm an active participant in the process of helping you use the subscription model, so I could only work with so many at a time. Thank you for your patience. The podcast is finally getting more traction, so please rate and review it if you haven't already to help others discover the show. And as always, please share it with someone you know. This podcast is for educational and entertainment purposes only, and nothing said is legal, ethical, or financial advice. Without further delay, here's the episode. Daniel Steinberg from Law Broker, so happy to have you on the Law Subscribed podcast.
Matthew, thanks for having me. Super excited to be here and talk a little bit about Law Broker and subscription services.
Yeah, me too. So we met like a year or two ago now, like something related to last, like 2022's tech show and Steve Fretzen, and we stayed connected. Just it's always great to stay connected with fellow innovators in the legal profession. So thanks for agreeing to coming on, seriously.
Yeah, I'm excited about it. I actually have a call with Steve Fretzen after this. So today's my Chicago day and we're just closing the loop like that. It's great.
I love it. I
love that guy.
So since I've known you now for well over a year, tell my listeners a little bit about yourself.
Yeah, thanks for having me and always excited to jump on podcasts and share a little bit about my story. My name is Daniel Steinberg. I'm the CEO and founder of Law Broker. We're pre-screening software for law firms. So my background actually stems from professional services, more on the accounting side than the legal side. Fell into tech sales on marketing and advocacy and parlayed that into a career at Clio running the app partnerships and channel program. And that's how everything sort of came together. And I think I found this sort of niche when I was working with Google on digitizing law firms' online presence and found this sort of gap into how consumers shop for goods and services, for commoditized goods and everyday experiences, and the legal industry, and decided I'd depart on my own and try and, you know, spearhead this journey of better accessibility while also providing the same client experience, whether it's for a consumer-based good or a legal-based solution. And that's sort of how it started.
Yeah. Before we even dive into that, though, accounting, that is actually something new to me, that's like where you were coming from. Now, accountants do both. They do flat fee, but they also do billable hour, right? And so while I have had one CPA for lawyers on my podcast who does subscriptions, obviously they're on my podcast, like what was your experience when you were on that side of things? Were they billing hours? Were they doing flat fee work? What was that like?
Yeah, I better caveat this with like, I'm not a CPA. So I actually quit before I started, but I worked at EY in private practice and I was working with C-level executives, COOs, CEOs, and so forth. And for me, it was actually because I wanted to be an entrepreneur. So I was very prescriptive in my career and I wanted to learn how to be a strong operator. But the businesses that I was working with traditionally were also service-based business. And some of them were using subscription services, monthly, annual subscriptions, but others were, you know, not necessarily doing that. And they were different types of businesses and business types. And I think you sort of have to take different learning experiences from what you see to cultivate where you go. And I definitely bridge that into how we think about some of the business structure of Law Broker. But from an accounting-based practice, it was EY, so obviously one of the big four, and they have a specific set structure on how their businesses run. So I wasn't working on the small side as you are.
Yeah. No, that makes sense. But even though that wasn't like where you stayed forever, right? Did you have to track time when you were there? Is that something you had to do?
I'm just curious. I definitely had to track time. I'm pretty sure it was on paper sheets, if I remember correctly, all those summers. But I'm pretty sure I was tracking my hours on my billables. I don't even know what, I don't even think I was allowed. I don't even think I was billing, to be honest, but I was for sure tracking the number of hours I was working on each client account.
Well, you know, they want you to, like, if they're training you, you know, like, they want you to learn how to do that, because that's how, you know, EY, that's how these consulting firms, they bill time too, you know?
Yeah. No,
not fun
totally.
though. Not fun, right? Even though you weren't billing it out, you know?
You know what? It wasn't for me, but for me, again, it was more of like the learning experience to become an entrepreneur. I think, you know, it crafts a great career for some people.
Yeah.
And, you know, not necessarily the right thing for others. And for me, everything in my career, even on the sales side at a company called Influitive, it was all about sort of building out that operational structure for running a business when I would eventually become a first-time founder.
Yeah. You know, you just made me remember an old part of my history, because I, you know, when I became an attorney, I thought I maybe wanted to be an attorney representing doctors because I had friends going to medical school. Then I was like, you know, this in-house thing sounds really cool. But like, if I go way back to like even like undergrad, and I was like, what do I want to do with my career? I was like, I might as well become an attorney because I like solving people's problems. And if I ever want to start a business, I don't need to hire a lawyer. So like entrepreneurship, right?
Yeah, that doubles up nicely. I wish I had that.
Although it's not worth it. It's not worth it. If your goal is to be a business owner, you know, the student loans these days, it makes that an unwise financial decision. So you dodged a bullet, Daniel. You dodged a bullet.
Fair enough.
But getting back to you, why legal tech? Like, why even start in that industry, let alone found a legal tech company?
Yeah, I, you know, when I said to myself I wanted to become an entrepreneur, and that was the path that sort of guided me to wherever I would stand, there was no intuition on what that product or service would ultimately be. But when I was working at Clio on the partnership side, I sort of fell in love with the scope of legal. I think that there's not many industries that are still ripe for disruption and change and technological advancements. And I found that there was this opportunity to support the industry in actually graduating to implement different types of technologies that could support law firms. And I sort of just fell in love with it. I liked working with law firm consultants. I liked working with the law firms that were the modern type of firms that were also trying to disrupt an industry. And I felt that there was a movement opportunity together to ultimately like come together and build something special. And I don't know, I fell into it and I loved it. And the other piece of it is, when you're starting a company, there needs to be a reason why you as a founder should be successful. It was always, you know, advice I got from one of our lead investors. You can't just, you know, spin up a business. There needs to be a conviction and reason why you and this company should be the right reason for you to succeed. And I had parlayed my different experiences with marketing advocacy and sales and partnerships and legal tech into building a legal sales and marketing platform, essentially. So it all sort of came together, and that's sometimes just how businesses start.
Yeah. And I mean, having worked for Clio, I mean, Clio's like the elephant in the room, right? Like when it comes to like legal tech as well. And I mean, not so much anymore, because there's been a lot of buy-in with just client portals and like matter management software in general. But at least in the earlier days too, like the clients of Clio were some of the most innovative tech forward lawyers, right? So like, I know, like, I guess you remind, like you said something like app interface, or like, you, I don't know, were you just working? Like, what was it like to be in that space when, like, you know, like that's the future of the practice of law?
Yeah. Working at Clio was obviously a treat. I worked on two portions of partnerships within Clio. So I worked on channel partnerships, which is essentially working with consulting partners, IT consultants, and so forth, really anyone that touches a law firm to make them more operationally efficient. And that could be with tools like Clio and or other app solutions that would be integrated into Clio. And that sort of bridged the experience of me working with the app ecosystem partners directly. So I worked on both sides of the fence. I was working with companies as small as Law Broker, all the way through to as big as, you know, Google, Intuit, and so forth. And that was sort of the two experiences that I had at Clio. But the goal for me and the role for me was, how do we support law firms to make them more operationally efficient and stronger and modern? And yeah, like you said, Clio modernized the industry for what that looked like 15 years ago. And a lot of people that jumped on the Clio train were the ones that were trying to compete against mid-sized firms. And they happened to be solo and small practitioners that needed a leg up and an advantage to work the same way that consumers were used to. And of course, the pandemic obviously elevated how many people are adopting cloud technology and legal practice management solutions to streamline their firm. But change management is challenging, right? And I think that when you have millions of documents, it's challenging to think, how do I implement a new system, let alone train on a new system for my staff? And overcoming that is something that ultimately every law firm is going to need to do in order to transition to the cloud and different tools that can help support them.
Right, right. So something that I spoke about when I had another legal tech entrepreneur on the show, Corey Kelly, was about pivoting. And, you know, the thing about being an entrepreneur and a founder is you're sometimes building the plane as you fly it. And for my listeners, like starting a subscription law firm, whether that's inside your own firm or leaving to go start your own firm like I did, you know, you become an entrepreneur too. And you don't, your initial vision doesn't always end up to be like the best thing for you to be doing for your business. And I've certainly made pivots as I started my law practice. So I don't want to talk about what Law Broker used to do because it's not relevant anymore. But I want to talk about your journey and the lessons you learned from starting a business and building the plane as you fly it, and then bring us to what Law Broker is and what it does today for lawyers.
Yeah, it's a really good point. And you kind of forget that every business owner has to pivot or think differently or change models and so forth. And yeah, you're right. Like, we did pivot. I don't even know how many times, but we did a major pivot from, you know, a product distinction. And I think when you think back to like what ultimately, why people pivot and what you're doing is, when you start a business, if anyone listening to this podcast is thinking about going on their own, you think that you have a hypothesis of what your customers want. So in your hypothesis is, customers want legal subscription, but that's a newfound service for most law firms, right? And that's your initial hypothesis. But when you start to adopt customers, so your first intuition is, I'm going to build something that I have a hypothesis and a guess on. But then you start adopting and bringing on customers. And that's where you have to listen and understand what the true intuition problems are. And some of them still relate to the hypothesis that you initially had, but you need to take a ton of feedback and not be offended to be able to shift focus to make sure that what you're actually building for is right for the majority of the market, because you don't want to pigeonhole yourself into a very small segment of that market. So for us, if we're talking about, you know, subscription services, we always were a subscription service. Our business was just a little bit different back then, but the core technology never actually changed. The difference of what we shifted from was just how we implement and execute our technology and provide that to law firms directly. So, you know, the journey really was about listening to clients, understanding the market, understanding the competitiveness within that market, and then figuring out ways to actually drive further opportunity for our firm to ultimately scale. And that's sort of how we became what we are today. And everyone has to go through that, but it, you know, people do it faster than others. And we did it relatively quickly to, you know, it's the classic, you know, thrive to survive scenario. Like, you have to make sure that you do everything in your power to survive as long as you can.
Yeah. Yeah. And so there's some great takeaways there, right? Listening to your customers and like being a good listener. Like, we think we're good listeners as attorneys, but we sometimes just listen until it's our turn to talk. And whether you're an attorney or anyone, a lot of people are like that, but actually listening to your customers, right? Growth mindset, right? So you said, you know, don't be offended. So, but that's the same thing, like abandon limiting beliefs, have a growth mindset. And then something I do want to just do a quick deep dive with you on is, you mentioned small markets. And I think there's nuance there that could be unpacked of the difference between a small market and a niche, and like niching down in what you provide versus like a small market, because there could be big opportunity in a niche in a small market. So like, how do you distinguish between those things?
Yeah, that's a really good question. It's a great point. So what we do now is pre-screening software for law firms. That is very niche. It's one stage above the intake, right? But every law firm needs it. Pre-qualification and pre-screening is something that exists in every single industry and every single business. So we know that the larger market, whether you're a solo practitioner or a 100-person firm, needs that in some capacity. Whether they need Law Broker is a different question and problem space to solve for, but whether they actually need to do it is the relevancy. versus when you think about a smaller end of the market, it's really thinking through like, does everyone or could everyone leverage this service? If yes, why? If no, how do you make it so that it can actually accommodate a larger market for everyone, right? Because if you're niche and small market, it becomes very hard to scale because trust me, not everyone wants your services or not everyone needs your services, right? Look at yourself. Like you don't need law broker services today. Maybe you do in the future. That's one person down, right? So you need to think about it from a standpoint of niche versus small end of the market of who needs that goods and service.
Right. And timing is everything too, right? And just like within the legal profession, we're all about referral business is how we get business. So you got to stay top of mind. So like, how do you do that, right? And like staying top of mind because timing matters too. But especially as an entrepreneur, as you're pivoting or adapting as you go, making sure, staying top of mind in a relevant way. Right. So you mentioned it. You mentioned you're a subscription business, and there's a million different ways, not a million. There's several different ways to implement a subscription business. And so I'd like to hear a little bit about how you're doing it. And you also mentioned pre-screen software for law firms. So tell us a little bit more about what that means specifically, because that is very niche, right? Like it's a one important part of the onboarding process and how the subscription model that you've decided, and what does the subscription model look like that you've decided to implement?
Sure. What should I tackle first?
Weave them together, weave it together in like a
Right.
way, because I really think it's part of the same conversation.
Yeah. So I'd argue that pre-screening is probably the most important function of your law practice. And the reason for that is if you don't pre-screen, then you don't find the right clients. And then ultimately, you don't have the client thereafter. So if you aren't doing your lead generation process properly and qualifying the opportunities that exist, then you have a bigger inherent issue within your law practice, which is you're focused on dead-end consultations. You're bringing on the wrong customers for your firm. You're not able to actually create that high-end customer experience that you're looking for. And it all starts back to that top of the funnel experience. So when we think about what pre-screening is really getting a good sense of who is your customer and what is that ideal avatar that we care about. If that individual that finds our law firm doesn't fit into that core bucket, we need to be okay with saying no. And it is a sales mentality. I know law firms and lawyers in specific, like they don't necessarily love using the word sales, but at the end of the day, bringing on clients and selling your services is a motion of sales. And part of sales, if everyone listening to this podcast has gone through a purchase or buying experience, you will know that there are things that are right for you because of specific questions that you were asked or because of questions that you specifically asked. And that is the notion of pre-screening and pre-qualification. The problem that exists in the market within the legal space is you go from customer finds you to here's my intake form. Are you ready to retain me? That's a very big gap. There needs to be some layer in between for a customer to essentially self-diagnose themselves on, are you a good lawyer for me? And also the law firm to self-diagnose the customer and say, are you a high quality conversation and that I should be taking? And that's what we do. And we do that through dedicated landing pages and low friction workflows where you can actually ask very simple questions that aren't considered intake questions like address and SIN number and all these good things that are frictional for people to answer, but qualification questions like, what city are you located in? Which is like the number one qualifier for can you even support that consumer because you only practice in a specific jurisdiction? And that's really the notion of pre-screening and what we do. We weave that into subscription service because ultimately, this is something that you should be thinking about from a long-term perspective within your law firm. So when we think about subscription services, we're an annual contract paid up front. There's a couple of reasons why we think about that. Pre-screening is an element of your marketing function, which means that if you turn off your marketing function, law broker is obviously a subset of that. You have to think about it as a law firm as micro level and macro level thinking. If you want a dedicated ROI to any software, not just law broker, you need to look at it holistically as an annual-based contract. If I do this for 12 months, what does this look like for me and my firm? And you need to budget that accordingly in order to think about that. So part of the reason that we focus in on these annual contracts is because we want the individuals to think about it holistically at a macro level, and we want them to budget for ROI on an annualized basis, not a month-to-month basis. And that's how we think about our subscription services.
I am admittedly a little bit jealous that we can't do that with the legal profession because of earned fees versus unearned fees, because what you're saying makes a lot of sense. And to the extent that if there's any listeners who are like, hey, here's how I'm using the subscription annually, reach out and let me know because I would love for legal ethics to catch up with like modern business models, because that makes a lot of sense. In the same way, if you're a business owner and you need to outsource your legal, the way that you're actually going to find value, the most value from that is when you have a year of having outsourced legal to just grow and focus on growing, building your business, right? But it's hard to, I can't, it's hard to get clients to commit. There might be ways to get clients to commit to it via contract, but like then to actually keep them and they still have to pay month to month because of ethics things. So I think that the annual model makes a lot of sense for the type of value that you're providing to attorneys. You also mentioned a keyword, friction. And I actually have not dedicated as much time to the concept of friction as maybe I should have for a podcast all about efficiency with legal services. So, it's why do I have to describe it when I have a great guest who can? So talk about friction, what it is, and why, at least for the aspect of the problem that LawBroker provides, why low friction is a good thing.
Yeah, so when I think about friction as a whole, it comes back to the education gap. So consumers of legal goods and services typically consume legal services 1 to 3 times in their lives. And I'm not educating anyone on listening to this podcast about that because you all know that better than myself. But when you think about that, that's not a lot of opportunity for someone to understand how legal services are rendered or offered. So when you think about friction, when you think, take yourself and put yourself in the shoes of something that you've purchased before, like a t-shirt, and then put yourself in the world of legal services and try and dissect the distinction between what happens when you go online to buy that t-shirt on Lululemon versus what happens when someone comes to my law practice and says, raises their hand and say, I want to purchase an estate plan or something else. The way that friction works is a consumer wants a frictionless experience, which means that there should be no distinction between those two functions, whether it's a professional service or a commoditized good. If you think about what LawBroker looks to operate with or operate in the space of, when someone clicks a button that says buy a t-shirt versus free consultation or consultation, because not everyone offers free consultation, but consultation for a legal service, these two buttons mimic the exact same thing, which means that you need to adopt different types of experiences that still feel familiarized to the consumer so that it still feels like they're going down the path of purchasing an item, which they are, right? At the end of the day, they're going through these specific scenarios because they are purchasing an item or a service or an experience. And that's the distinction that we're trying to solve the gap on, because unfortunately, there is this mass education gap. And it causes friction between the lawyer and the consumer. The lawyer and the law firm is upset because the consumer probably just says, you're too expensive. But the reason that the consumer says you're too expensive is because they don't actually understand the journey of how law firms operate. And that's one of the biggest problems within the legal space. That's where we sort of intercept and say, this is how you actually solve for that by guiding the client through these legal experiences through an actual journey, versus a very like step-laddered approach that they're not familiar with.
Right. And I think an important takeaway, because now I feel like I could spend like 30 minutes just on friction, is
Next pod, next pod.
yeah, next podcast is like, if the goal is like get clients as easily as possible, like, you want to eliminate friction as much as possible with the sign-up process, right? Which sounds like LawBroker does, but introducing a little bit of friction might be intentional and a good thing to slow down so you don't get the wrong client, right? Which it also sounds like LawBroker does. So like for example, you mentioned the location thing is a great example. If I have to type in my whole address, that takes more time and introduces more friction than just saying, I'm in this state. I'm in the state that I need to be in. To if my problem is a state law problem, right? Versus federal law. And your client can't know. necessarily that there's a difference between state law and federal law. So like, how does a law broker help law firms with the onboarding side of like, you know, somebody's is looking for someone for state law versus federal law? Like, how does, like, what does that look like? How do I lower that friction? Like, use the right amount of friction in that scenario.
Yeah, I was talking with an attorney about this morning, which is there's a huge distinction. What exists today is contact us forms, which ask for your first name, last name, email address, and text box input. That's low friction because that's not asking for a lot, but it's driving the wrong type of intent. Mm-hmm. Whereas if you take the approach of a workflow experience, what it does is the workflow I just explained, which says text input, tell us a little bit about your case. The customer doesn't know what the law firm wants them to say. So they might say, I need help, or I have a problem. Okay, well, we'd assume that would be the case if you're coming to my law firm. The distinction between workflows and driving a more of a low-end experience, or a low-friction experience, excuse me, is the distinction between asking someone to fill something out and guiding someone through questions that actually take them through logic so that they actually understand what you want them to answer. So that's where Law Broker actually comes into play. It takes into consideration this quizzing type of opportunity in consumer psychology, where it asks one by one question, guide the client through the questions that you ultimately want answered in multiple choice, drop down location type question by leveraging different types of technology than the traditional text input button. High friction is asking someone to fill something out. Low friction is actually having someone click buttons that can give you more data up front. So the distinction is trying to drive high intent and high intent leads versus high quantity by not giving you enough data.
Right, right. When I went solo, I pivoted from mostly litigation to a transactional only practice. I did not have a database of documents to automate. That's why a business and employment legal document database and automation tool like 650 is super useful. I can rely on the quality of the documents in 650's database since they're putting excellent legal minds to work curating and updating their documents and automations over time. When you're not billing by the hour, outsourcing and efficiency matters, and 650 can help you scale your practice to get high quality documents drafted in less time. Use the code LawSubscribed at 650.com and when being onboarded to get 10% off. If you're not a business and employment attorney, or you have your own documents that you'd prefer to use, then my next sponsor, Gavel, is the automation tool for you. Gavel allows you to build shareable, client-facing workflow and document automations. In other words, Gavel helps you create a legal practice where attorneys can monetize the value they bring clients in productized form at scale via subscriptions and flat fees. Use the code LawSubscribed at gavel.io to get 10% off an annual subscription. There's no one right way to automate and scale your practice, but with one or both of my sponsors, 650 and Gavel, you can take your subscription law firm to the next level. Links to both in the show notes. Now back to the show.
I really didn't intend for that, like, you know, divergent conversation on friction, but I think it's relevant. I think it's very relevant. And so I'm glad we spent the time there. But let's get back to the subscription that you've chosen to implement, which is the annual subscription. Talk about like how, like, and prices are always subject to change, right? And while I try to keep these episodes evergreen, so there's no need to drop your prices because they may go up, they may go down. But talk about how you came to that decision. You touched on it a little bit, but like, how the sausage is made to select annual versus monthly or weekly or usage based or other models. Like, why did you land on that annual subscription? And also, how do you figure out how to price it?
Yeah. Wow, there's a lot to unpack there. Let's start with the model we chose. I as a business owner, forget about Law Broker. I as a business owner, everyone listening as a business owner, you want buy-in when someone purchases your services and or product. And if you're not bought into understanding the why behind something, you shouldn't buy it. And it goes down to the same notion. I'll use legal services as an example. If you have a consumer that is so price sensitive, that is apprehensive to purchase, and then they say, okay, I'm interested in moving forward with your business, you've convinced me, whatever, that might be your biggest nightmare client. And you don't want those clients. Those are the ones that are going to provide you a one-star review. They're going to call you every second. They're going to be problematic clientele. It traditionally costs a business more to adopt customers that aren't fully bought in, that want month-to-month services, than just saying to those individuals, I'm so sorry, but I have to self-diagnose yourself out because you don't have buy-in to this product and service. You're not the right fit for our business. So we take the same methodology as pre-screening and try and diagnose the right people in by providing a little bit of friction on the pricing element of it, right? And that's really important because it costs more money for someone to cancel your service when you've onboarded them, trained them, showcased how the service can be leveraged within them, for them to turn around a month or two later to say, actually, I no longer want this service because I didn't see the ROI, but really you should have annualized the ROI behind it. So that's why we think about, you know, annual contracts at LawBroker. It's all about buy-in. We want people that are bought into the product ultimately and foresee this as like a growth mechanism to their firm. That's that piece. I'm going to pause if you have a question on that before I drill into the how do you come up with price perspective, because that's the challenging question.
Just, I think you just gave a great example, though, of the startup concept of eating your own dog food, where, like, you know, can you use your own product or use your own methodology in like the way that you yourself self-select and pre-screen your own clients? So I think that that's just a nice little startup phrase I'll throw out there to my listeners, is eating your, that what Daniel just gave a great example of is eating your own dog food. So onto the how you figure out exactly how to price it.
Yeah, there's no secret for figuring out how to price it, honestly. So LawBroker adopts a custom pricing model, more just so that we can get a better sense and, again, qualify specific customers during our sales process. We have, you know, an average price set that we think is the right fit for a firm, but pricing in itself is like a whole other product and business. It's very challenging to figure out like what is the right dollar amount for this specific goods and services. And I think what it comes down to is you get the early adopters and the customers and the basis there. You get a sense by doing case studies and understanding what their ROI return is, how much, you know, value they're receiving, and then you shift and change your price from there once you actually get a good sense of where your business is actually supporting the customer. So I'd say pricing is actually an evolution similar to pivots, which we talked about earlier in this conversation. I don't think that any set price is the right price. I've seen companies that are super mature that still change their price, and I think they usually typically go up versus down. But I think it's evergreen. It's consistently evolving based off new products, new services, new features, and so forth. So to go back to that, our pricing methodology, the reason it's not publicly available on our website is we qualify what the customer actually needs from LawBroker because we have specific features that may or may not be important to a firm. And that's how we price. So we have baseline price, but if you ultimately need integrations and another feature and so forth, those have a monetary value associated to them for us to come up with the actual custom price for your firm. And that's how we think about it. The reason we do that is because we know we're going to build out future features that not everyone will need, so they can mix and match different feature sets versus having SKUs.
Right. That actually leads me to a question that I had for you that I ask all the legal tech founders I have on the show, which is, you know, what if I'm like a super busy law firm owner or a solo, or all my staff is like has their hands full? Do I still have to myself build out the onboard, like the pre-screen like workflows, or does someone from my staff have to, or is that something that LawBroker does as well? Do I get to choose my own adventure with that kind of a thing? How does that work?
Yeah, we provide like baseline pre-screenings and workflows and things like that. And then we ask the attorney or the staff to review it because we're not ourselves attorneys. So you need to sort of double check our work, if you will, to make sure that it's valid for your firm. And the other reason for that is we want to make sure that it's relevant and valid to your firm in specific. Some people have different qualifiers than others. Some people might want to ask what your budget is. Other people think that that's not relevant, right? So there are different qualifiers that firms ultimately self-diagnose. And so we provide sort of like the skeleton of your, what we call LawBroker storefront. And then it's up to the firm to sort of take that from there.
Okay. And then when I'm in there, and I guess I should reference that I'm sure you've done more of these, but at least for the Chicago Bar Association, you did do a CLE. And as part of that, you showed the law broker system and how it works. And so if somebody wanted to go and see that, I'm sure they could also go on your website and book a demo from the first page, right? So if somebody wants to see, like, you know, that process, this is a primarily audio podcast, so you're not going to see it here. But it's law broker without the E before the R, lawbroker.com, right? There's a
But we
demo
own
page.
both. But we own both domains, just in case you misspell it. But
Okay.
we had to be cool when we adopted the platform. Yeah, you can go to lawbroker.com, LAWBROKR.com, and book a demo with our team. We also have publicly facing YouTube videos, which is
Okay.
part of our onboarding experience to really guide people through it. So if you must, or if you want to sort of see it in action, you can head over to our YouTube page to review that.
Okay, that's actually a great resource. I'll be sure to link to that in the show notes as well. My question for you related to that though is like, okay, so let's say like, you know, they've signed up, you've built out the default settings for the pre-screening in light of their practice areas that they told you during your pre-screening that they offer to their clients, right? And then they, like, the attorneys give you feedback on like what needs to be changed, and law broker changes that, or the attorneys go into the system and they make the changes. Like, who's or both?
Yeah, not law broker unless you want to contract us. Typically, a
Okay.
law firm might have like a marketing agency that supports them on their Google ads and things like that. So we are an account-based product. We're not a user-based product. So we have different permission sets that you can invite different users into the firm. So if you want to invite law broker team as an agency partner for onboarding purposes so that they can help build out the structure, the look, the feel, the change management, and so forth, that's eligible. But typically, a firm admin, an operations staff, a marketing manager, those are the individuals that are client-facing on Law Broker. So, like you mentioned, you're an attorney, you're super busy. Traditionally, the attorneys aren't dealing with pre-screening. That's typically a front of staff focus. So you're typically working with the firm administrator to build that presence out. And we try and work with them to showcase how the platform works. And we built what I would refer to as something as simple as could be for purposes of that, right? In order to go in there, edit the questions, delete them, change them, and so forth. Law Broker's platform auto designs it. So you give Law Broker's platform the data, and they auto designed on the front end. So you don't need to necessarily do that yourself.
No code solution, right? Is that what you'd want them to?
Exactly.
Okay. All right. So no code
Exactly.
solution. So lawyers who are scared of coding, don't worry. Law broker's not a, you need to
No,
know how to
don't
code.
code. Yeah, don't code with us.
Okay. And another thing you mentioned, which is something you see a lot in terms of pricing these days with legal tech, is like a per user type pricing model. And so you've said you're not a per user type pricing model. So just in case this is the first time somebody's heard that, like, what does that look like if somebody's charging per user, and why have you decided to not do that?
Yeah, per user pricing is typically adopted for platforms that are an everyday use case from a back-end perspective. So when you think about legal practice management solutions like a Clio, a MyCase, a Lawmatics, and so forth, these tools have attorneys, staff, firm admins, and so forth going in there on a day-to-day basis and doing their time and billing, their invoicing, their payments, and so forth. When you think about Law Broker is more of like a customer-facing experience, and it's actually customers interacting with it. And your job is to build out the back end of Law Broker and leverage the data insights to make smarter decisions. But it's not something that you're leveraging on a day-to-day basis, nor is it meant for every person within the firm. So we chose to choose what we call like an account-based pricing, which is, hey, this is your firm's platform. You leverage and bring people in accordingly, but you don't have staff coming in here every single day to monitor Law Broker.
So just to be crystal clear, like a law firm X with law broker, and whether it's a solo practice or it's a 50-person firm, you know, everyone who could get in there gets in there. It's because it's the law firm that is the partner, or the has the account with law broker, right?
Yeah, exactly. And when you say everyone, you know, a lot of people at a law firm won't interface with Law Broker, quite frankly. There's specific users. So there might be one or two users in there. There might also be a support external agency out there that runs your marketing, your website, your whatever, you know, so you can really structure it however you so choose.
Are you partnering with like any of these third-party marketing agency type things? Like Spotlight Branding comes to mind. I've guest appeared on their podcast. You know what I
Oh yeah,
mean?
me too. No way. Back in my Clio days.
Yeah.
Yeah, so So LawBroker works to like partner with marketing agencies, website platforms, and so forth, because LawBroker is an extension to your website. When you think about your online presence, your website is one source of truth that's really good for branding, SEO, blogging, and so forth. It's really an awareness play so that people can find you. But if you don't land on someone's website, you need to have that enhanced presence across the internet. And that's where LawBroker plays in, because we're a dedicated hyperlink that lives on areas like Google, Avvo, Facebook, social media links, and so forth on very high call to action buttons throughout the internet.
I think that this next question is relevant for my audience, but maybe not for like most lawyers out there who have no idea what platform their website is actually built on, right? If you listen to podcasts, if you watch YouTube videos with ads, you've heard of Squarespace, you know, like people have heard of Squarespace. GoDaddy has website builders. WordPress is like the most used one. Like, so I personally use Card, and so does it matter which one of these platforms you're using for LawBroker to work with like a website?
Yeah, that's a really great question. The answer is no. We chose the methodology of a hyperlink so that there is very low friction because, like I mentioned, the website is one source of truth. So if you're embedded on a website and someone doesn't land there, that's where the challenge arises, right? You want to make sure you can capture high intent consumers no matter how they find you or shop for your goods and service, right? So we're a hyperlink, which means that we sit on buttons on your website versus actually embed on your website. So you could have any type of web builder. You could be using, Clio Web Builder, the, Cosmolex Web Builder, MyCase Web Builder, any one of those, or, alternative ones that you mentioned.
As much as I love legal tech, I still like to see what else is out there that other
Totally.
companies, other businesses are using. So I think this is the part I want to really try to drive home here at the end of the day is when you're not billing your time, you need to be as efficient with your time as possible. That doesn't mean your time isn't valuable. It just means you have to choose different ways how to spend it, even the time of your staff. So like I'm a true solo, right? But if I have a staff person who's taking care of the pre-screenings right now because I've trained them or I've had them trained to do it, I'm paying that person to do that, right? And like that has a cost associated with that. What I love about legal tech and law brokers specifically is that that largely automates that process, right? You put in the time, just like when I had Gavel on, and Gavel's a sponsor of the show, you put in the time ahead of time to create your automations, to create this process. And then whatever that fee, that annual fee is that you're paying, it's less than paying a full-time staff person to do it. And now if you still want to spend those resources, you could pay somebody to help build more automations elsewhere in your firm for with those kind of resources. So this is why I'm really glad to have LawBroker on the show, because it's introducing it to people who want to launch a subscription model for their law practice where efficiency matters. It really, really matters. And so my question for you, I mean, you're welcome to just comment on anything I said, but I didn't really ask a question there, is I know like you're a startup, but I mean, have you seen any of your clients like using alternative fee arrangements? And like and if so, like what kind of alternative fee arrangements have you seen? And if none, we'll just cut this part from the episode.
Yeah, no, it's not that I necessarily have seen specific law firms use like alternative fee arrangements, but I will comment on the efficiency piece and shout out Dorna. I didn't know she's a sponsor, but Gavel's great and she's awesome. But when you think about efficiency for your practice and where, again, this is outside of LawBroker as a whole, when you're evaluating software, because we talked about how do you commit to annual bases and things like that, you have to think about the opportunity cost along with the ROI of a specific function, right? So most technologies shouldn't replace your staff. They should optimize your staff. So if you're sitting as an intake staff, a LawBroker tool, for example, can help optimize which specific case you should or file you should be focusing on because of the high quality, high intent, and high opportunity to convert. Whereas if you're not doing that, you might be wasting a lot of time on dead end consultations, which is okay because maybe your staff isn't the billable hour. But the difference is that those staff have an opportunity cost of picking up the call there versus supporting on a specific case that is actually paying you your service fees. And I think that's a really big distinction. And again, that's far beyond just LawBroker. That's adopting any type of technology and the methodology you should actually be thinking about when investing in technology.
And I think I maybe already made the pitch for you, but just in case there's anything else that you want to say about this question I have for you, which is my last substantive question, is how can Law Broker be used as part of a law firm using the subscription model?
Yeah, I think it doesn't matter if you're a subscription model or not, but obviously a lot of your listeners are. And I think that's what I would say is it's a qualifier for are you a modern practice? I think firms looking to adopt different types of fee arrangements, like you just mentioned on the subscription side, faces this modernization for growth. And I think Law Broker is an element of a growth lever to your firm. And we help from an adoption perspective, to say, how do you drive the right customers that are open to using legal subscription services? And that's really a key distinction, because Law Broker is a self-diagnosis to actually guide customers through specific legal services that you offer by providing the menu of services that you actually support. And in turn, you want to make sure that those individuals are okay leveraging alternative fee arrangements like subscription services and so forth. So I think there's a great marriage between, you know, leveraging a Law Broker platform and subscription legal services, because it shows high intent to modernize your practice, think differently, and try and market yourself to a specific audience on the other side.
I just came up with one more question to ask you.
All right, let's do it.
Because that made me think of how if I wanted to, maybe this is not the specific use case for Law Broker, but if I was pre-screening somebody and they're actually like the perfect client, where like, let's say I'm an estate planning attorney and they've pre-screened into like they need an estate plan, and I have already an automation like through Gavel or something set up where it's like they could just click that link and fill in the information and get it. And I might not even need to interact with this person, because I've now productized legal services where maybe they just want to get the estate plan. And if they have questions for a lawyer, like maybe that's an additional level of engagement. But is there a way to, if I wanted to, like if I broke Law Broker, like slip in.
Let's hope you don't do that.
No, I know. But I'm saying like to use it for an unintended use case of like somebody's pre-screened right to like, here's the link, fill out this information for your simple estate plan, and boom, you've got your simplest, you know, you click pay and boom, you got your simple estate plan. Like, is that something that either I could finagle right now with Law Broker, or is that like on the product roadmap? Because I feel like if somebody's already like doing that and it's low friction, like why not just low friction them all the way to purchasing that simple estate plan kind of thing?
Yeah, that's actually so odd that you bring that up, because I spoke to an attorney this morning that wants to leverage Law Broker for that use case. So what's really interesting is that it was for an estate plan. It was filling out and automating and so forth, paying right on the moment in time that they're ready to purchase that. So there's no breakage of Law Broker. I think the value of technology is if there's custom solutions and it's out of the box, but no code, and allows you to play with it how you want, then you create your own Law Broker experience. And this is the fun part about being a startup, but you actually educate others, like you educate the company on different ways and use cases that can actually be leveraged. And I think that's the really fun part about running this company.
Awesome. That's great. Well, my last question for you is a hot dog a sandwich and why?
Wow, that's a really good question. Yes, because it's in between two pieces of bread. That's my hot take. That could be completely wrong. I didn't know that question going in.
All good. Where can people find you if they want to follow up?
Yeah, you can head to lawbroker.com, book a demo, get started. You could also find me on LinkedIn.com/dsteinberg9, STEINBERG9, or email me at daniel@lawbroker.com.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much for coming on the show.
Thanks, Matt.
Thanks again to 650 and Gavel for sponsoring this show. The best way for others to discover this show is for you to share it with someone you think would find a value from it. Follow me on LinkedIn, since that's where I'm most active on social media, and click the bell towards the top right of my profile to get notified about all of my posts about this podcast and everything else I think is valuable for you to see. To get in touch, message me on LinkedIn or email kurbis@lawsubscribed.com. All links are in the show notes. Until next time, this is Matthew Kurbis with Law Subscribed.